is Publishing Talk, the podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Allie Willis, who is a person I would say is hard to categorize, but I would say overall is an artist, a spectacular and interesting artist that I think a lot of the people who listen to this show will be interested in hearing from. Hi, Allie. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good?
I'm assuming that, you know, at least a few of the people who are listening to this may not know your background, so maybe you could just talk a little bit about some of the things you've done.
Okay.
And then we can talk about how you work with the web and the social,
okay,
the social world.
All right. Well, I'm going to really condense it and give you the budget tour of my career. I started out as a songwriter. I don't know how to read, write, or play music. I hear everything in my head, and then I just kind of plunk things out. I've sold over 50 million records. My first hits were Earth, Wind, and Fire. I wrote September, Boogie Wonderland, In the Stone. I wrote the whole I Am album except for two songs. I have a Grammy for the soundtrack of Beverly Hills Cop. I wrote Neutron Dance by the Pointer Sisters and Stirred Up by Patti LaBelle on there. Other big hits would be Pet Shop Boys with Dusty Springfield, What Have I Done to Deserve This? I wrote the theme to the TV show Friends, I'll Be There for You. I co-wrote the musical The Color Purple. Musically, all different styles of music. I still, don't know how to read, write, or play, but I'm a firm believer in someone doing something they're passionate about by any means necessary, and I think my lack of knowledge gives me my hook, basically. I have a big YouTube song out right now called Jungle Animal by Pomplamoose and Allie Willis. They're a big kind of, YouTube sensation group who I saw do September, and I thought they did a really unique version.
Right, and they did a really interesting collaboration with Ben Folds,
yeah,
which is part of his new collaboration with Nick Hornsby, which is
another
right. really interesting thing, I think, because it shows this sort of networking ability or the network effect of artists from different...
Right, yeah, he just called them basically to produce the song and do the video. I also did a matching game, online game to that. I have a whole separate art career, everything from painting to sculpture to furniture design, set design. I got on the web extremely early, 1991. I started prototyping the first social network in 1992. I've addressed Congress on cyberspace. Make videos. I've archived my life solidly since 1978, basically documenting almost every minute with either videotape or audio tape. And when I saw the web for the first time, it felt like a whole new medium to me. It didn't just feel like a means of communication or getting information. And I always, despite my success, always felt very stifled in Hollywood. And I don't just mean Hollywood, the entertainment business in general. Originally because I was a multimedia artist and that was very frowned upon. I mean, if you were a songwriter, all you were supposed to do was write songs. Very frustrated because they were so late to the game with the internet. And, I went around to record companies, film companies, TV networks, as early as 1992 saying, you guys have to take this seriously. Your businesses are going to be gone. Let me be the liaison. But no one understood it, and no one took it seriously. So everything that's happening to all of them are very well-deserved and was completely predictable. I'm just someone who's always looking for ultimate freedom and new, ways of expressing myself. In fact, I just got back a couple days ago. I went back to my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin, where I had one of the most unbelievable experiences of my life. I got to conduct the 350-piece marching band in front of 82,000 people at the homecoming game playing all my songs, and I don't read a note of music. So, you know, the whole thing was just, it was completely surreal.
And that's a pretty big stadium that they have.
Oh, my God, it's massive.
So I saw on your blog, which is ALLEEWILLIS.com,
Slash blog, if you want to go directly to the blog,
right.
But you can get there.
It's great. You know, these, and of course it's all red and white, but and I thought there was something you said in the latest blog that I thought was really important, which I won't read it completely, but it's the paragraph where you said that your primary canvas as an artist is yourself, and that you're always exploring where you are, consciously or not. In a sense, what digital technology is now enabling you to do.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is the reason why I preach it so much. You know, it isn't. You know, the first wave, I think, of anything, certainly of any new media, is to mimic the old media. Like the original television shows were, you know, people standing with scripts still in front of a microphone.
Right. It was the proscenium model of plays or vaudeville was what they tried to replicate because that's what they knew.
Right. You know, and just like the internet, still being used in an incredibly archaic way, you know, interactivity passing for downloading a song or watching someone else's video. I mean, the first step of it, that everyone is an author, not just the people who officially call themselves authors. Everyone is an author. Everyone is a creator and a collaborator.
Right, which is sort of, remember, there's a book called Here Comes Everyone, and essentially that's, you know, that is what has been going on for the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years as the tools become, I mean, a lot of people just use the web passively to consume.
Yeah.
But vast numbers of people now are participating in the creative process.
Yeah, it's a way of preserving, number one, it's a way of preserving your own history. And I do think, you know, that history eventually will be told by reading the stories of millions, not just reading the one textbook, which is probably only that person's opinion, you know. And beyond anything, though, it's a way of expanding yourself. You know, most people understand that it's a way of expanding your community, you know, in the same way that the automobile made your community be, you know, extend to basically however far you could drive, as opposed to only knowing your next-door neighbor. Well, this is the same thing. You know, this is the automobile times, you know, 28 trillion, where, you know, someone living in the farthest reaches of the world can be, you know, have more of an exchange with you than the person living next door.
You know, but of course, this creates this really big challenge, and I think that's something that we haven't figured out yet. I think eventually it will be figured out, is how do you navigate, how do you keep track of, how do you find your way through that vastness of creativity, you know, that people in the book business talk about this a lot. I'm sure you hear it in the music business, too. If everyone is a creator, and Amazon and iTunes essentially flatten the universe, it makes it possible for anyone to present their work.
Right.
How does somebody find out about it? How do you see what is interesting to you? And there are so many different things. And the hierarchical system that used to exist has really fallen apart and is breaking. You know, you don't have authorities now saying, this is the best music, everybody should listen to it. So you don't
have... When, in fact, it probably wasn't the best music.
No, it probably wasn't, but it was a system. It happened, you know, it worked for whatever, you know, worked for people who were selling records or people who were selling books.
Right.
It may not have worked for culture as a kind of creative entity, but still you're faced with that issue, I think. Now, of course, maybe this is simplistic, but, you know, because on the one other way of looking at it is, well, it will all become apparent. But it is true that for instance, I found you and your work. I mean, I've obviously listened to your songs and not known who you were, but I found you as an artist somewhat accidentally. It turned out through reading Bob Lefsetz And then it turns out that we have a mutual friend, and that's sort of an accidental find.
Right.
How would I know about your work if it wasn't for that accident?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's the challenge, and I by no means have the answer, you know, but I my feeling is, you know, we are in the most cataclysmic evolutionary period known to man. Because up until now, starting with the caveman and going through, you know, the late 1980s, basically, we knew that we lived on a place called Earth. We knew that, you know, if we were going to reach people, it was going to be by one of several ways. Telephone, walking and finding someone, flying on an airplane, taking a boat, you know what I mean? There was just X number of ways that was going to happen. And then you could communicate via a letter, a phone, you know, maybe you would make a home movie and spend a lot of money making a copy and sending it to someone. But that was basically it. Well, all of those rules of community and socialization have completely changed. So those who resist it are definitely living in the dark ages, and that's a choice they make. You know, that's okay, but I think they're missing out on life, really. And those of us who are here in the, you know, first, and we're probably in the third wave of it right now, you know, everyone's treading water at very different rates. No one ultimately has the answer, because if there were one answer, it would become the standard. But it's really, it demands behaving in ways that we were never taught to behave. And I think if you are a creator and you have to get your work out there, I'm doing it in the most naive ways possible, and I'm probably doing it, you know, 90% more than the average person is doing it. But, you know, I think you just have to find the things that are most comfortable for you. Like, I'm very comfortable on Facebook, though I resisted it for a couple years. I definitely had a chip on my shoulder about, you know, I thought of this 20 years ago, and I didn't go farther with it because there was no way to protect people's copyrights, basically.
Right.
So I felt that I took a moral stand, and someone else took an incredibly immoral stand.
And they succeeded.
And really, isn't that the way it always is? Isn't it the most gluttonous one, you know?
Right, or the one who pays no attention to embedded rules. In fact, you were following, in a way, you were following a set of moral imperatives, a set of rules that really don't apply.
Yeah.
But you were following them because they mattered to you at that time.
Well, and they matter to me now. I'm a mensch, you know, and I think Zuckerberg's an asshole, you know. And I think the people who started YouTube didn't consider any of that, you know. I can't put up videos of my own songs, even though I own the copyright to the songs.
Right.
Because someone else owns the copyright to the videos. However, like, I'm doing a series right now called The 365 Days of September, where every day I spotlight someone on YouTube doing something to my song, September. No one's paying me for that. YouTube, those founders are making a bundle, you know, for riding off the backs of a trillion artists that came before, you know. I understand that's the way of the world, and I've accepted it. I still think they're all assholes, but, you know, that's the way it is. And, you know, whether you think someone's an asshole or not, those are the rules of the new world. So you got to get with the program.
Right. So it means you have to figure out a different way to either make money or control your work in some way.
Yeah, and you also, in terms of distributing it or trying to get people to know who you are and where you are, you have to, you know, try some of these things and see what you're comfortable with. Again, because I'm a very social person, I actually like Facebook. I don't like it for how it malfunctions. I don't like it because it was designed by an incredibly antisocial person, and that shows to me in the interface. But I do love that it's made connections incredibly easy, and I love talking to people I haven't talked to in 50 years, you know.
Right.
Whereas tweeting drives me nuts. You know, all I do all day is write. The last thing I want to do is give someone an up-to-second, you know, bulletin of where I am, despite the fact that I know that would be very good for me to do. And it used to drive me nuts, and I used to try and be on MySpace, and I hated MySpace. I hated the design. I hated everything about it. And eventually I went, you know what? I'm just going to deal with Facebook. And I send out, like, one tweet a day, but it's mainly just to broadcast my blog. It's not really the way you should be using, you know, Twitter. But, you know, we're all in the, you know, beginning of this revolution. And, you know, you have to find something that's going to make you sane, or else you're constantly going to feel bad that you're not keeping up.
Well, so what would you say, you know, if, let's say, a writer came to you, not a songwriter, but just, you know, a fiction writer or a nonfiction writer, poet, somebody who's used to the old ways, and they haven't really figured out how to be social yet, you know, because for a lot of artists and creators, the social is not as comfortable as it is for you. But what would you say to them if they said, well, you know, I want to start somewhere, I want to do something. How do I do this? Where do I start?
Well, in terms of being social or in terms of getting their work out there? In terms of being social?
Well, both. I mean, because in a sense, that is now, you know, part of the redefinition is that this, you know, it's not going to work for everybody. Not everyone needs to be a social being who isn't. But if we're saying that the culture is moving to a different way of communicating where you have lots of creators, but you also have a much closer relationship between the people who read and the people who write, or the people who create and the people who listen.
Right.
And so the barriers between people are much reduced. Now, of course, that can make you very uncomfortable. If you write something, it's a big risk to put it out in the public space, and then somebody says, I hate it.
Right. You know, which is, you know, going to happen no matter what, because people are going to be jealous by the fact you have something out.
That's
the nature of the beast. You
but
know, you're not going to find everyone praising you, even though you might deserve to be.
Right, and on the other side of it is you get to find people who love your work who you would never know before and who have never been able to find you. So, but do you actually put work up on Facebook, or do you mainly use it as a communication device and kind of...
No, I actually put work up there. Like, I, you know, publish my blog there every day. And I have two separate pages. I have my personal page, which that is becoming of less and less interest to me because they limit the number of friends you can have, an incredibly antisocial thing to do. So I'm at the point where if someone wants to find me, it can't be through Facebook unless they know I have another page, which I do because I do have a social network I started a year ago built around the crazy things that people collect, because I'm a real collector, and I firmly believe that environment influences brain and friendships and socialization and everything else. So that's called the Allie Willis Museum of Kitsch, awmok.com, and I'm only throwing that in there because then I have another page for that on Facebook, and that's where you can add, you know, I can add way more people than they allow you to do on a personal page.
So is that like a like page, or what they used to call a fan page?
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
And so the Museum of Kitsch is kind of that's part of your art.
Oh, it is my art. I've never viewed anything on the web. I've used the web differently from most other artists I know right from the beginning, because I was so passionate about the fact that it was a medium and new mediums need new art forms. So I never ever used the web to just slap a poster up of what I was doing, or, you know, I didn't think of it as promotion so much as it was a multimedia medium that I could express myself through. So, if I have a song to promote, I'm not just using it to put the song up there or to put the matching video up there, which I also make. or a matching game. It's how they kind of all work together, and I really view art forms in this new world as social spaces that like-minded people can congregate inside of. So, which is a very different way of viewing a song as a, you know, as just a piece of music that someone can listen to, or a movie, something they can watch on the screen.
Right.
There are opportunities to have groups of people who are there for the same purpose. And that, you know, is where the fun begins. I mean, it's not so much fun for me yet because I don't have enough money to do anything that's in my head, but it's how I function on the web for the last 20 years.
Well, I think it actually is reminiscent of, you know, things that people in the book business have talked about most recently, in the sense of trying to think of the book as a social event rather than as a containerized object.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe it's just that, you know, the book, you know, the book is a very conservative kind of object. It's been around, people venerated, it's well loved, and so it's taken a while for people to recognize how the web could generate that kind of differentiation, you know, in the way people interact with the words, and the way that people, it's not, as you said, it's not just slapping it up on the web. It's about figuring out how people can interact with the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that's great is you may be doing that through a publisher. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have a publisher, but then there's so many independent things that you can do, you know, as well. But, you know, look at the book as, you know, that's the, you know, the fish hook with the bait. You know, fish that are interested in this particular kind of bait come here. But once you're here, there's a whole lot of other things to talk about.
Right, and that's sort of the social add-on where people, it's sort of like saying, you come to my house because I'm serving really good milk and cookies.
Yeah.
But once you get here, let's stay and talk about it.
Right. You know, and the other thing is that, you know, well, I guess because I think, you know, all mediums deserve different art forms. So, you know, I don't really view a book as something just printed on a printed page anymore. And that is how the publishing industry views it, because that's how they know how to collect their money. You know,
although that's changing. I think that it is difficult, and I think it will be difficult for embedded institutions to change, just the way it's been difficult for the record business to recognize that their world is moving into a social environment just the same way.
Yeah.
But people are coming along and doing this every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, because the tools are readily available, and you have so many smart kids who are growing up with this, with the tools and the technology and the web as part of their everyday lives.
Oh, yeah. They don't, you know the old way. Although I've always been dead against the argument that all the revolutions are coming from 16-year-olds in their garage, you know. But I do think that those kids have an advantage because that's the, it's the only world they've known, you know what I mean? So they're trained for how to think and function in it.
Right, I agree with you. It doesn't mean, just because you're young doesn't mean you're going to be more creative than somebody older, but you do have the ability to, for instance, kids go to high school now and learn, they can learn Dreamweaver and Photoshop. And,
yeah, it's,
you know,
incredible.
All that is there, and it, you know, that's, if you grew up learning how to type, or, you know, learning to play an instrument kind of in the analog way, it's harder to be digital.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you can't.
Yeah, no, I agree. You've got to completely unlearn.
Exactly right. And
yeah.
Although, again, I think the, you know, you come to every experience with a different set of values. So a young person who doesn't know anything about the past will make something new, but a person who is older who does understand the past can make something new that is informed by their past experience.
Well, I mean, that to me is the best thing. I, you know, the old argument used to be between something being commercial and something being art. And I never, ever bought that distinction because I thought the absolute best stuff, if you look at the books, the music, the movies, whatever, that have absolutely set the standard for the next, you know, decade or whatever. And that, of course, has been very reduced now because everything comes at you so fast. But those things were always where there was something very, very new about it, but there was enough of the old and the comfortable and the things that you know that worked so that it wasn't a jolting experience for someone. And my thing has always been about, I always say it's about combining the high with the low. You know, like in music, I've had a lot of hit songs. I've worked with incredible artists. I've collaborated, you know, Bob Dylan, James Brown. But my serious fascination is way down at the other end of the scale. I don't know if you ever heard of a group called the Del Rubio Triplets.
Well, yeah, mainly because of you.
Oh, okay. Well, so they were around mainly in the 80s, and they were, at that time, three 75-year-old identical triplets who wore miniskirts and go-go boots and played three very out-of-tune guitars, but very in tune with each other. I mean, they, of course, had no idea that they were out of tune. And, you know, they sang, and I started booking them at all these parties. I'm a very serious party thrower because that used to be the only place where I could do everything I did,
right,
you know, in one spot. So they're kind of kids' parties, but as performance art.
Right.
So I would have the Del Rubios there, but then if I had a hit out at the time, I would have the Del Rubios sing a duet with Pet Shop Boys, you know, same song. Or, like, I have video of them doing Neutron Dance with the Pointer Sisters, and it is not a harmonious blend. I mean, the Pointers are one tempo and one key, and the Del Rubios are completely, you know, off in another planet, but it's that kind of, oh, my God, you know, you get the kind of expertise and technology and everything else that exists at the top, you know, in the highest form it can possibly be in, and then you get the serious heart and soul down at the bottom, the people who are doing it purely for love, you know, of the art. And, it's an incredible blend. So I always try and do that in everything I do. There's some very high elements, and there's some very low, cheesy elements. And I'm equally as intrigued with both ends, and I have no interest whatsoever in the middle, where everyone's playing it safe and dressing alike and going to the same clubs, and no interest to me whatsoever. Those aren't the people that are changing the world.
No, I think you're right. Well, you know, you've got the extremes tend to be where the action is.
Yeah, at either end. I mean, people think it's just the top. That's not the case. You know, it's at either end.
Right. No, I think that's a really interesting point, and I think that actually is apropos of the argument that is often played out, and that is between quality and quantity, you know, or like you know, populism and the canon of literature or something,
yeah.
You know, that it isn't an either-or. It's a both, and that both have values. They just have different values.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think that's great. Well, this, Allie, it's been really great talking to you. You are terrific, and I hope that we'll get to talk another time.
Yeah, I would love to, and thank you so much for seeking me out.
Oh, no, listen, this is exactly, you are exactly the kind of person that I'm interested in, which is, you know, people who are doing things on, you know, kind of out of love and desire rather than, you know, because somebody said this is how we're going to make money.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I wish I had more of the other stuff in me. You know, people always assume I'm completely loaded, and instead I'm always living on the edge because I take every penny I make and invested back in what I want to do next. And now, you know, it's not like most things I do even have an income derived from it. You know, like people tell me they want to be, you know, a songwriter, and I go, well, do it if you love it. Do not do it to make money, because there's very, very few ways to make money doing that anymore.
Well, I think that's true for all of the arts. I think
yes.
At this point, you know, if you think you're going to do it to make money, then I think you really have to kind of rethink, because it's just not going to work.
No, absolutely.
And of course, it's one of those things where if you really love what you do, you have a and you're authentic and you know you're good, you have a chance. But if you try to go for the gold, I think that is really the path now to failure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, don't go into show business or anything remotely content, you know, associated with entertainment. Not right. And the people who are still making the big bucks, for the most part, a lot of them, you know, kind of bringing the whole thing down because everything is so packaged and so milquetoast, you know, that comes out of a lot of the, you know, big budget things. It's, you know, it makes the ground more primed for revolution for people that don't have those kind of budgets.
Well, that's actually great. You know, I think that the more opportunity there is for people to work from the margins, the better off we are.
Yeah, well, as a culture, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's really what matters.
Yeah, and I think as a culture, we here in the United States have a lot to recover from, you know.
that's another conversation. We'll have to save that for the next time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the importance of artists in that revolution, because it's really important.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
And this, I've been talking to Allie Willis. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you, David.